Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. September 6, 2020. Medium published my new article Faith and Belief in Times of Crisis. When things go wrong, people look heavenward for answers and comfort. Since ancient times, people have looked for something to hold on to in moments of crisis and distress. So it is only natural that this pandemic has triggered a search for an upper force, as studies confirm. This outcry will accelerate our discovery of the meaning of life and help us internalize an answer that will be found in the power of love between us. This outcry will accelerate our discovery of the meaning of life and help us internalize an answer that will be found in the power of love between us. A quarter of Americans say COVID-19 has strengthened their religious faith, while just 2% claim it has weakened it, according to a Pew Research Center survey. Other studies confirm a direct link between natural disasters and moments of crisis and an increased tendency to turn to a higher power. The number of Google searches for the word prayer in 75 countries has nearly doubled since the beginning of the coronavirus crisis. People need to feel that they have an anchor, that there is something to trust or hold on to. Like a child grabs its mother and does not let go because she is perceived as the safest place, we too, grown-ups as we are, need a source of security. In the world around us, we find no such source. Humanity once turned toward the inanimate forces of nature, such as the sun and moon, as ruling powers. Today, with nowhere left to turn and nothing left to believe in, only a higher power remains. But exactly who or what this is, we are not sure. There are endless discussions, hypotheses, perceptions, and beliefs surrounding these questions. After all, our hearts yearn for certainty that something is managing and arranging everything in life. At the end of the day, we may ask whether the exact nature of a supreme power matters, as long as its very existence helps us feel safer in our short lives in this world. As long as our faith calms the weary psyche, we choose to cling to it. And when one person feels better, it is good for those around him, because calm people are kinder to one another. They are less willing to quarrel or hurt others. Although specifics and customs around belief may differ, each of the 8 billion people in the world believes in something, and this faith is accepted as normal by almost every person. This notion of faith is also related to the concept of prayer. Since the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic, people's beliefs have brought them together in common prayers that have been broadcast live to masses on social media. The consequences of collective prayers are also positive, because when people believe that they can access a powerful force by uniting in a common plea, they do it through the process of connecting together and asking as one. And if there is some trouble in our lives, this trouble binds us to each another. When we are more unified, our unity certainly draws a response. When we overcome the distance between us, and express willingness to gather to unite in a common request, transcend above the individual ego, the single factor that keeps us apart, we thereby improve everyone's fate. As long as we ask for everyone's sake, and not for the detriment of anyone, our prayer is accepted. In the end, it does not matter at all why we believe, to whom we turn, the specific religion or method we practice, or even in what language we pray. What matters is our common desire and request. As a result of the pandemic, we have reached a new stage in our development, which will propel us to a new degree of life. A new worldview of humanity as one family. The problems we face are pushing us forward. They are helping us discover that the supreme power is one and is for all, and that it can be accessed through the connection between us. Humanity is discovering the power of love that is revealed in our unity. My new article on LinkedIn: When the Levee Breaks. It was not at all surprising to discover that Jacob Blake Sr., father of black American Jacob Blake Jr., who was shot on August 23 by a white police officer in Kenosha, Wisconsin, has a long history of racist, Anti-Semitic posts on social media. Anti-Semitism is growing everywhere. The tension is in the air, and even where it is still quiet, it feels as though the ground is shaking under our feet. When the levee breaks and the flood begins, no one will be sorry to see the Jews drown. The level of anti-Semitism is skyrocketing not only in America, but the world over. But the US, where the Jewish community is the most prominent and powerful in the world, will be the epicenter of the cataclysm. It's hard to tell when the critical point will come, but if the trajectory does not change, it will come for sure, and American Jewry will experience what every Jewish diaspora has experienced since the exile began 2,000 years ago: extinction and expulsion. In a world so full of hate and so devoid of humanism, we cannot ignore our obligation to the nations, to be a light unto nations, to set an example of unity and mutual responsibility. We do not need to please the nations or appease them. They don't judge us by how we relate to them, they judge us by how we relate to one another. When we hate each other, they blame us for spreading war among them. Simply, without an example of unity, they cannot unite and begin to fight. And deep inside, they feel that it's because of us. We have given the world science and technology, art and culture, knowledge and wisdom, yet the world hates us more and more and does not show us any gratitude. It is time we realize that these are not what it expects from us. It expects from us to set an example of our vuthadidit, mutual responsibility. We became a nation only once we united as one man with one heart at the foot of Mount Sinai, the mountain of hatred. Immediately thereafter, we were ordered to be a light unto nations, to bring the world the unity that we have gained. The absence of that light of unity is the cause of the chaotic world we live in, and our obligation is to bring that unity by setting an example. We can deny it, but denial won't discharge us from our duty or convince the world that we are not to blame. So we can choose to unite above our hatred, do what the world expects of us, and win its favor for the first time in history, or take the flogging of humanity as we did in Europe 80 years ago. Health and Medicine, Part 8. Maintain homeostasis with nature. Question: why is it not enough just to be in harmony with nature and society and thereby ensure good health? Why do you still need to take care of your body, lead a healthy lifestyle, eat right, and so on? Answer: naturally you need that. Who will support your physiological system if not you? You are a biological machine. Therefore, you must maintain biological homeostasis with nature. Question: yes, but my physical body is a consequence of my desires, thoughts, and psyche. Is this related? Answer: so work on your desires and psyche so that you automatically have the right relationship with the surrounding nature to keep you in balance with it. Question: and then I will achieve harmony at the level of the psyche? Answer: to do this you must perceive the world around you as a global system with which you have absolute communication. Question: then you no longer need to engage in the body and do physical exercises? Answer: you will perform certain exercises, take this or that form of life, based on your properties. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, May 14, 2020. New Life 1157. Know yourself.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Eshedarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about discovering our true self. We'd like to understand the need that people have to discover their true self and how to work with this desire in the best possible way. Be with us. Yael, please. In recent years, we see that more and more people are starting to search or are trying to understand who they really are. We use the word I many times a day, but who am I? This is a relatively new question because I can't remember my grandmother asking this question. My mother, at an older age, she did start asking, and in my family were three brothers, and it's something that we've been engaged in for quite some time. In the past, if a person would ask this question, it was more related to religion. Today, there are many more options. Today, there are many more approaches to a person's self-development that try to give an answer to who am I, what are my abilities, this on the basic level, in order to realize my potential. Who is my true self? Who is my not true self? There's like this feeling that inside you there's a kind of a fictitious character, that it's not my true self. So we're trying to tell the two apart, and always there's this feeling in a person that something inside of him is hidden from him. And I'd like to ask, why does a person have this desire altogether, the need to discover who he really is? This is actually a person's entire essence. Who am I? What am I for? What was I born for? Where did I come from? Where am I going? What for? These thousands and thousands of questions, they're roaming like this cloud, like a cloud of mosquitoes around the person all the time, going, not giving him rest. And therefore, what follows is that this is something that I have to resolve. Otherwise, my life's meaningless. And then I start looking at myself through the eyes of, who am I then? I'm meaningless. I don't take up any volume, space in this world. No one takes me into consideration. Neither do I. Altogether, it's worthwhile examining these things because the lack of a person's identity, of self-meaning, pushes a person to such actions that might be very dangerous for his environment. Because if I start discovering that I'm nothing and no one takes me into account or consideration and I have nothing to do with this world or the environment, so I take a machine gun and I start shooting everyone. No, not shooting everyone. It's not about other people, but it's that I have no choice. But this is how I position myself in the center. I determine my meaning, even in this strange way. Meaning to know, who am I, what am I, what for? These questions that we discover, that we discuss, a person gets a response, an answer to it, this protects him and gives him a certain direction in life, and vice versa. If we neglect this, then people don't know where to head, in what direction, with what questions, toward which goals, nothing. A person feels himself hanging in the air. And then, because of absence of meaning, lack of meaning, disorientation in this space of life, he's ready for anything just to make it go away. Because then a person really feels that he's hanging between heaven and earth. He's like a baby crying that he was forgotten someplace. It's interesting what you're saying about orienting yourself in the space of life. There's a feeling that nowadays people have a need to discover who they are and where are they positioned in the space of life. And then they run in different directions, and directions that they themselves don't understand. But they get into such things, take such paths in life, that it's really hard to come out of. They go in, get all tangled up, and then it's really practically impossible to get out of there. And then a person's there, and it caused them real anguish. In the past, people simply lived their life. They didn't ask too many questions. It's because their ego was small. They didn't ask because they didn't have the original question of, what am I living for? What is my life's purpose? An animal doesn't have a question about its life's purpose, or a baby. But a developed person, and how many of those do you have in the world? Suppose 5% of the entire population, maybe today 10%. But still, they're asking, what do I exist for? What was I born for? What's the use? What do I have to give the world? What does the world have to give me? What kind of interaction does there have to be between everyone? So it's a part of a person's development, of the development of humanity, that it's happening now. The need to discover your true self, is it innate or does it develop over time? It's innate and depends on a person's soul. On what level of incarnation is it? It doesn't depend on the person himself, but on the soul that accompanies him. And according to the soul, it erupts at a certain point in a person's development. Yeah, suddenly discovers that I have to enter this society. I have to know this. I have to develop in one way or another. I can't go on with life today and tomorrow like I did yesterday. Do you see it on a child from a young age? Yes or no? It could be expressed, but in the meantime in corporeal things, whereas later on it's expressed in true spiritual search, meaning when a person starts looking for the root of his soul, the source from where my internality comes from. Is it something that is revealed in all people? It has to appear in each and every person, but in the meantime, we're in the beginning of this period, and therefore, it's something that appears only in 10, maybe 15, maybe a bit more percent of the population. Because according to the percentage of depression that we see in the world, probably more. But still, the question is, what level is this depression on? The question of, who am I? What's the meaning of life? And so on. So, here too, there are many stages to discover this. It's like with the four sons that are asking on the Passover Haggadah. So, this is exactly the state that we have to reach, like that son that doesn't know how to ask. This is the main question. I feel bad, and I don't know why, how, where does this come from, what for, nothing. So this question is the most important one. There are approaches that say that a person doesn't have to get to know himself too much, but that he has to, you know, live your life. Leave the human level, live on the animate level, like a beast. Yeah, stop investing so much into it. It only confuses you, makes life more complicated. Just live your life. What do you think about this approach? Sure, it's more comfortable and convenient. And surely many times in life a person escapes to this method. He takes up some scientific field, culture, education, fills himself with different forms, different kinds of engagements. That's it. I know that I stumbled upon such things, such people, and when I asked them how come, then it calms them down, it calms this innate question in them of what's the purpose of life. They said that they were recommended to find some kind of occupation, some hobby. So one of them, for example, He was told, you study the 30-year war. There was the 100-year war, 30-year war. He engaged in that. Start writing really a doctorate about it. It doesn't matter that you're not a doctor or anything, but write about it. Put together such an essay exactly about who, where, what, everywhere. Look in all archives and libraries in the world for everything that has to do with it. Be engaged in something else. And he really got into it, and it really caught him up so much that when I saw him years later, he seemed really content with life. Is there a price that such a person pays? I don't think that we can talk about the price here, because a person doesn't feel. He feels that he found some kind of remedy that helps him. He's also afraid about leaving whatever he's doing. He's also proud about it. He built an inner world for himself. He lives inside his research and among the heroes of that 30-year war. And other things like that. And he's happy, he's content, as opposed to others that don't know what and how. That's what he's engaged in. It's important to him. He has self-dignity. And of course, this has nothing to do with the meaning of life. Meaning, he doesn't learn about himself, but he learns about someone else. He doesn't develop himself. He develops a certain marginal and completely as a disconnected subject from himself. This is exactly what I wanted to ask. Learning about yourself, the need to discover who you are. Like you said, it's an innate need that awakens in a person to get to know who he is. Yes, who am I? What am I? What purpose was I born for? Who pushed all these things into me? Why doesn't all of this knowledge exist in me to begin with? Why is it hidden from me and I have to reveal it? When you want to reveal it, it doesn't work either. Try to reveal it and you'll see that you can't. Why is this knowledge hidden from me? Because first of all, a person has to already be developed enough mentally on the human level, socially, culturally wise, educationally wise, he already has to be a human being in this world to some extent in order to start scrutinizing these things. It won't come to someone in the jungle. Maybe, but for it to really come in a true, serious manner to a person, it's after a person finished with humanity, with his material development, and he reached a state of despair. Even though that he doesn't know what is the reason for his despair, that he sees no result from the entire development. He has affairs inside himself, everything that humanity did up until now and its thousands of years of development, and what does he see? I have no idea. What's the purpose of life? What is all of this for? Culture, education, science, everything. I can fly to the moon and back. I can travel around the world, and what? He still doesn't know what is the meaning of life. For him. So, I want to be a bit more focused on what I'm asking. You gave the example of traveling to the moon. We discovered the moon, we research it. Here you're saying that there is something here that isn't somewhere out there or that's outside of you that you study, but there's the thing that's closest to you, which is you yourself. And you don't know who you are. This is what you can't discover. Seemingly the most intimate thing is the thing that's most hidden from myself. Yes. Why? Because it's the hardest thing. But it's me. It's not the moon somewhere out there. You are the most hidden unknown creature. This is what it's about, that all of our senses are working outside of us. I see what's outside of myself. I hear what's outside of me. And it confuses me. Look what people are engaged in. Television, radio, internet, they're engaged in all those things that are outside of them. But going inside yourself and starting to learn who you are, Mister, this is very hard work. I have no idea how to do it. I have no instruments with which to do it. And not only that, I'm not succeeding. I don't even know how to approach it. It's a completely different method. It's either that I study the world that's outside of me, or I'm studying the world that's inside of me. This is a hidden world. You need different tools, completely opposite tools. What kind of tools do I need in order to learn or study my inner world? I don't know. What, you're going to cut yourself open, start analyzing your desires, thoughts, drives? How come suddenly I have a certain desire for something that appears from someplace? Where does all that come from? Who's there inside of me operating all these things, and I'm the one only feeling a result of all of this work? There's some kind of engine, mechanism inside of me. How can you work with that? I don't know. Many times, a person is actually in a situation where, on the one hand, he really doesn't know many things about himself. It's like Owen said, that I don't know about the thing that's closest to me, myself. On the other hand, he does have a feeling that he knows himself. He has like this double feeling. What's hidden and what's revealed to a person about himself? I'd say that a person doesn't know himself at all. Why divide it that here I know a bit, here I don't? You're a psychologist. I'm not a psychologist, but from what I understand, this is what you do more or less. So we see that a person doesn't know who he is, doesn't know the root of his origin, doesn't know himself, his character, nothing. In regard to the internality of a person, all of humanity is failing big time. And even now, with all of our equipment and everything, you can give us different tests, examinations, x-rays, MRI, whatever. You will not find anything that points at what's called the soul. Eventually, it's called the soul. Our inner part that's awakening me, that's enlivening me, directing me. All in all, this inner part that's preparing my emotion and intellect and thoughts and everything, the innermost part is called the soul. And we know nothing about it. Suppose there's a new baby born. Can I say something about him? No. There are things that I can't determine in any way. And what is that part that it does seem to us that we know ourselves? We don't know what our internality is called the soul. What is that part that it does seem to us that we do know about ourselves? It's a person, when he's born, once he comes out into this world, out of his mother, he starts perceiving the environment, how is it treated. He starts learning like a little animal. This good, this not, I should, I shouldn't. With his ego, which is the general force. And then he learns, what kind of good interaction, successful interaction can I be in with the environment? And then what follows is that what we later see is what he learned from the environment. We see how he sums up for himself what kind of relationship should he have with the environment. And about that we say, this is who that person is. This is his character. But it's not his character. He simply learned from the environment that this is how he should be. And does he have something more internal, which is his, that he didn't learn from the environment, but it's something innate? Yes, but he won't be able to discover it. This is a person's internality? Yes. You said that the most inner thing in a person is his soul. What is the soul? A divine part from above. Meaning what? It's something that to us is unknown, but it's something that a person has received, let's say, with birth. That's also not clear to us when and how, but this is what speaks in him. In what way does this part speak in me? How is it expressed in me? And that I want to discover the root of my soul. I'm not revealing my soul, but I want to get to know it, and therefore I want to discover the root, the origin of the soul. What is the root of my soul? The upper force, the creator, that progenerates my soul. From your answer, I understand why is people's search and the need that you said that it's something natural, that naturally awakens in a person to find out who he is, brings people all around the world to religion, because you started talking about the upper force. Yeah. A person who doesn't feel that the religious approach is the right approach for him. Those people that don't have this religious approach to life, do they also have the desire to discover who they are? It has nothing to do with religion. But you talked about soul, upper force. These are words that are also used in philosophy, psychology, in different ways. So can you explain these terms a bit? A person's internality that operates him, and what does he have as a result? Where does it come from? His life, where does it come from? What am I developing toward? What is humanity developing toward? Something that exists in the essence of the universe, of my entire life. I don't know anything about it. I'm living in some defined place that I was given to exist in according to certain laws, and that's it. It's like children that they're told, you go here, you come back home, you watch TV, then you do that, you play, tomorrow again, and so on and so forth. This way they want for us to exist. And I have the desire to understand why, what for, where does it come from. And here, I start having questions about who am I, what am I, what for. So, once I have this inner thing asking these questions, I wanna know, who's that asking these questions inside of me? It's not my animate body that wants to eat, rest, and have a good time. Who is that then? The human part in me, but what is that? It's a question, and I find no answer for it, and therefore I continue searching, because without that, I feel that life has no meaning. What advice from your experience could you give to a person that wants to get to know his inner self? What good advice could you give him that will direct him to the beginning of his journey? Just to find a place where he can be taught how to do it. There's a million different methods and techniques that teach a person how to discover who he is. Can you give us some advice that will be true and correct for every person, no matter where he's from, his socioeconomic state, his IQ, something that will be correct for every person in the world today or in 1,000 years? Once a person, this desire to discover who he is, has awoken in him. He has to find a place where he's taught how to rise above his animal, animate nature, beastly nature, that the form that he has to achieve, to come to, is the quality of bestowal, which is above his own nature of reception. He has to hear how to rise above his beast. What do you mean by beast? Beast, I mean his desire to receive, that wants to rest, enjoy, fulfill itself, to live for the sake of fulfillment. And the human part, what is that? The human part in a person is a soul that tells him, no, you don't have to live for the sake of fulfillment. You have to live for the sake of rising above the fulfillment, so that your entire aspiration will be toward, even though that you're fulfilling yourself, still you live above that fulfillment, because unless you fulfill yourself, you'll have nothing to rise above. Meaning, the spiritual being in us is built upon the corporeal beast. A person trying to discover who he is, that's the spiritual part in us? Yes. You're all the time distinguishing between the beast, or those ordinary desires that we're all familiar with, and the soul, or that inner desire that a person has. What is the relationship between these two parts? I understand that we have to shift from one state to another, which is more advanced. Yeah. What's the relationship between these two parts? What is the process of revelation that a person has to go through? He has to go through importance. That in the past, what was important for him was his beast. Life altogether, with all of its achievements, and this time what's important for him is how to rise above it. Two, to other values, different values. And this is what the soul is searching for. That's the truth search. Dear friends, unfortunately our time's up. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. We'll talk about this on our next shows as well. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
Time of the day and brain function. Question. Scientists say our brain is able to solve more complex tasks in the morning. In the afternoon it is on decline, and in the evening it is better to perform some creative tasks. Do you think that the time of day associated with the physiology of our body can somehow affect our work? Answer, naturally. When I was studying with some of the great Kabbalists, I observed to what extent they were not able to study seriously in the evening hours. Yet at night, getting up at 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning, they work normally, connecting to the upper levels of the universe. From CapTV's Management Skills, July 2, 2020. Before and after the Internet age. Question. Psychologists say that the biggest gap exists between millennials, people born in the 80s-90s of the 20th century, and their parents. Scientists call this gap a digital conflict. We are talking about people who entered the era of the Internet, and there is a huge gap between them and their parents. What is your opinion? What happened during this period other than the digital gap? Answer, we, those who lived in the pre-Internet era, know how we existed. We went to work, returned from it, bought food, carried it home, cooked food, and went to bed. And the next day the same thing happened again. Like in Charlie Chaplin movies. Today, everything is completely different. We live in the Internet, in integral communication between each other, between all parts of the earth. We don't even know from where we are being written to or where we are writing. It doesn't matter to us, because we have moved to a completely different level of communication. If you cut off internet connection between people now, you can imagine what chaos would reign on Earth. Imagine that there was an alleged explosion of solar activity, the plugs burned out, and all communications failed. All management systems would cease to function, military, civil, ministries, banks, and so on. Devices would stop working in hospitals, everywhere, anywhere. In other words, now if we break the connection between us, which did not exist 50 years ago, we would cease to exist because we would not have any means of communication. Everything is tied to this. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era May 21, 2020.